Hey Mickey, you're so fine, you blow my money, Mickey. I'm Mickey. Who the crap is Mickey? That's what we want to know. Who is Mickey? And would they feel okay about basically being told, you're so fine, you blow my mind? And do I have dirt on my face or is this a bruise? I don't know. You guys, here's the thing. Welcome. Welcome to the Insomniac Episode 8. Insomniac Insights. And I think I have to come to a full confession. There's really nothing, as a general rule, valuable about the Insomniac experience. So... Anyway, hey, Sarah. Okay, I want to just start right off with the topic that we ended with last night, which was books. I don't even know if I can care if you don't like it or not. I mean, I'm such a book nerd that I'm just going to talk about a few of the books that I've read recently that were flipping awesome or authors that I'm in love with, okay? So that's how we'll start. I hope you're well. And you guys should be sleeping. I'm worried about you and I'm worried about your health. Again, I'm greeted with the poop, the plastic poop that my daughter has left for me on my desk. This is my family. There's something wrong with my family. They're leaving poop on my desk. So anyway, it's been a great day. Tomorrow during the encounter report, we'll probably unpack this a little bit more. But today we got ourselves 8 ducks. And it's just, somebody was like, we're getting rid of ducks. Who want them? We're like, we'll take them. And then we got a bunny rabbit for Ella for her present. So hopefully that'll deter her from messing around with my desk. I want to talk about 3 or 4 different books. A couple I've maybe alluded to before, authors that I've mentioned. Here's the first. Dies the Fire. Okay. I read this book recently, and it was phenomenal. It's kind of the idea of what would happen if we encountered some sort of an apocalyptic event that basically changed the whole way in which we look at life and would have to live. And in this scenario, it's like an EMP, an electromagnetic pulse that... almost even changes the basic chemistry of things, so you can't fire a gun. Gunpowder won't work in a proper way. The only thing you can do is you know, kind of almost go to a primitive way of living. Plows, horse-drawn carriages, you know, maybe bicycles will work, but no electronics, no electricity, that kind of stuff. And I loved it. Now, one of the primary characters is like a witch. So like an herbalist, and so in some ways I have to confess I got super irritated with some of the verbiage and I don't know, I like, instead of, you know, like you'd have a normal, like a Christian kind of verbiage would be, oh, thank God, or I'm, you know, like, or dear Lord, you know, the verbiage would be like, you know, thank the horned Lord or something freaking weird. And so I don't know, maybe it's a little bit of a tell when you have certain people that are like always like using religious language and everything, when it just almost seems like, is there any real voice here, or is this just some sort of a mimicry, you know? Let me give you an example. I have a person that I know who, growing up in the Protestant arena, you know, this is an example of their prayer. Forgive me if this is going to be offensive, but I've already pretty much ticked off hundreds of people in the last few days with Facebook, so why not continue? But here's an example of their prayer. Dear Lord, Father God, you know, we come before you, Father God, and we ask, Lord, that you would, Father God, help us, Father God, to, you know, Father God, just to be really in the zone, Father God. And at some point, you're like, if I hear the word Father God one more time, I think I'm going to go crazy. And I love the Father God. I'm just going to tell you, I'm all in with the Father God. But there, I mean, it's just a weird thing. So in some ways, one of the characters in this has that kind of almost bizarre repetition, and it drives me a little nuts. But I love the book because I kind of like the premise, the idea of how, what would I do if I were in a scenario. And then wouldn't you know, we're in a little bit of that scenario. So basically we're hoarding animals, figuring out how to get seeds so we can plant, preparing for the apocalypse. Guns, bullets, and nails. That's kind of our mantra, right? I've already completely gone insane, and I'm not even, 5 minutes into this. Let's move on. Here's another book. Phenomenal. Probably one of the all-time favorites I've read in the last couple of years. It's called Beneath a Scarlet Sky. You can find this book on I don't even know how I ended up. I found this in a Goodwill. Do you know, it was years before I could find this in print. The first place I saw this and the where I got it first was on a was on Kindle. So I got it. I read it. It's one of the best books I've read, period, period, period. And it's kind of about the Italian resistance during World War II. It's amazing. It's amazing. Tennille, good to see you. Hang in there. We appreciate you. You're doing such a great job. 13th shift in a row. You're doing heroic work out there. We love you and all the people in the medical world helping people who are sick and hurting. You're definitely the heroes. And I do think, in all seriousness, the Father God who is with you. So, you know. Anyway. Mark Sullivan, I don't know much about what he's written outside of this, but seriously, you guys cannot go wrong with those two books. Lauren from Australia, it's good to see you. I miss my Australia people. Hopefully, I'll see you guys coming up in January if we're all allowed to get back to normal life, you know. Last night, I mentioned Brendan Sanderson, Mistborn. This is the one I'm reading right now. I'm probably about a third or a fourth of the way through. Phenomenal book. He's a legendary fantasy writer. He finished the Wheel of Time series by Robert Jordan, and he's got tons of books that are out there. I'm loving this so far. It's phenomenal. You know, I like a book that makes me keep thinking about it the next day. So I've already, you know, I'm playing with two or three different books pretty heavily right now. So we'll see what happens. And last but not least is just one of my all-time favorite writers. His name is Jim Butcher. This is kind of a collection of short stories, but I've read almost everything by Jim Butcher. He has two books coming out this year on The Dresden Files, number 16 and number 17. And I can't wait. I'm so pumped about it. So, yeah. Anyway, so I always love to hear what you're reading. Thanks for sharing that with me. And of course, it's just an excuse for me to go searching online to see if I can find it for like $2, because that's all I can afford right now. But Linda, my wife, is turning me on to a lot of BBC series. So we've been watching three series off and on. Well, four really. One television series kind of flow we're playing with is Cranford. And she has seen this already probably two or three different times. It's my first time watching it. So far, so good. The second is, it's called Lark Rise for Candleford or something like that. We've only watched one episode. I have. Linda's watched the series two or three times. It's great. So far, so good. Loving it. And then the third is a series called The Village, which is not like the M. Night Shyamalan movie, The Village. This is like a BBC-type version of a small village around the time of World War I, beginning of the 20s, and how these characters grow up. And I'm just really kind of enjoying that. And of course, the movie, the TV series I've been complaining about for a week or two now is Twin Peaks. And we're just on hold now. We finished the first season and I don't even know if I have the energy to go and finish the second season. But that's that. That's that. Last thing, a small aside. I've been watching, I think I'm on the second season of that All American. That's a big thing. It's been kind of tracking right now. Yeah, Lark Rise to Candleford. That's a great book. Thanks, Melissa. And thanks, Brent, for watching County Route Report. I watched your third night a little bit of The Mission. Brett's been doing some cool stuff on his neck of the woods out in Boston. So pretty awesome. But you know that show All American, and the main character, the main guy who goes from you know, the ghetto into Beverly Hills and is the football star. He's English. He's BBC kind of. He's got a thick British accent. I had no idea. And of course, Linda, who's super keen on this stuff, she's like, "Yeah, I kind of figured he might have been because he had a weird way that he would pronounce his words." And I thought, I didn't notice it at all. I thought he was basically like a perfect reflection of the character he was playing in that series. So kind of awesome. Anywho. So we've already just talked about books, and we talked a little bit about TV shows. So what are you reading? What are you watching? I'm always kind of fascinated with that. This is your nighttime, no regrets kind of hangout. You can share with me. There's no judgment here. You can tell me I've been binge watching for, you know, 2 days straight. I'm still in the same clothes I wore a week ago. You know, I haven't shaved my mustache, and you could be a girl. All right, so... This is good, a safe place. Hey, James Solomon, good to see you, brother. Yeah, man. Yeah, you gotta stay healthy, brother. It's funny because I sleep every night with a CPAP machine, you know, because I apparently snore way too loud and I sound like I'm dying. And part of it is because I'm fat. That's true. But I'm working on it, working on that. And, but the CPAP has been kind of awesome. And I have to confess that I'm psychologically, mentally, I think I'm okay. And I don't have to worry as much about, you know, the coronavirus trying to kill me because I have my CPAP machine that's shoving air into my face. So there's no logic. Like, there's no medical logic to what I just said. I just need you to know that. And I understand that. Okay? So... We watched 1917, Josh. We watched that as a family recently, that movie. We've watched a few movies lately that we were wanting to you know, kind of get into. One was the 1917 one, World War One. Super good. But I was expecting it to be better, actually. But it was really good. Really good. We started watching The Last Kingdom. Thanks, Brett, for sharing that. Ozark, I've seen the first season of Ozark, have not seen the second two seasons, but we have seen The Tiger King, and all I got to say is, freaking Carol Baskins. Nobody has time for her right now, right? What do you mean you got rid of the CPAP, Jamie, did you get too skinny? Is that what happened? I'm a little bit afraid if I took away the CPAP, I would snore so loud, my wife would probably... almost, you know, she would like super social distance me. Do you know what I'm saying? Do you understand what I'm saying? Whew. All right, so some of you are representing here the literary nerd world, which I appreciate. Reading Until We Have Faces. I've heard of that book, but I've not read that book. And watching Star Wars, trying to get my 13-year-old to like it. I know, here's the thing. Angelita Chavez. Here's what I'm noticing. I try to introduce some of the cool things I loved when I was a kid, and it's like they're so spoiled. They're so spoiled. They just look at me like I'm crazy because I think that particular TV show is awesome. You know? I'm like, I mean, you guys don't even realize how epic this was in the day. But, you know, they're in a whole different world right now, literally. And Schitt's Creek, Sarah, I'm glad you brought that up because, seriously, Linda and I, we basically watched all of the series that was on Netflix. And now I keep asking myself, how do I find that final season that just had its finishing episode, that had the last episode? And so I did find it. It's on, because I have DirecTV, so it's on like 243 or something, Pop TV or whatever. But the only problem is that, like, I think I can only record the last three, so I don't even know how to record the previous 12. So I'm going to have to probably wait. But I do love it. Schitt's Creek's funny in a million ways for me. One of the main reasons that I really liked it is I'm a fan of Eugene Levy. And I can honestly tell you I'm representing here my love for Eugene Levy, and that I remember being introduced to him on a show called Schmengi's Last Polka. And I would almost bet 99% of you have never, ever, ever heard of it, let alone seen it. But it was an indie kind of movie, almost SCTV movie coming out with John Candy and Eugene Levy. They play these polka legends, and it's kind of a documentary on them as polka stars. And I have to tell you, it just was so freaking funny. I could quote that movie practically. My cousin and I, David and I, we would watch that, and we would just kind of go back and forth with each other. Anybody who was in my life back in the 80s, I tell you, I was throwing that at him, having him watch it, because it was so awesome. So anyway, I was a huge John Candy fan, Steve Martin, of course, Martin Short, and Eugene Levy, Rick Moranis, you know. I mean, anybody back then was kind of a legend for me, comedically, and I just was all in. So you do a great Moira Rose impression. She's the same lady, obviously, that was in all of the Christopher Guest movies, like Best in Show, A Mighty Wind, and, you know, whatever. So she's awesome, actually. And all of their stuff is improv, pretty much improv driven. So if you like that kind of improv spontaneity a little bit, then you might like Curb Your Enthusiasm, which I freaking love that show. I was just watching it before I came on. Larry David, I don't know, they have 9 or 10 seasons of that. So it's a great show of just constantly putting you into the realm of neurotic anxiety. So it's pretty awesome. So anyway, long and the short of it was, I wanted to kind of turn the corner a little bit and talk about some other stuff here, but I appreciate everybody's kind of flow here. Mel Brooks movie. My favorite Mel... It's funny that you say this, Josh, because my favorite Mel Brooks movie was... you would think, well, maybe it's, Spaceballs or The Young Frankenstein and all that, but it was Blazing Saddles. And it was Blazing Saddles because that's the movie that I played for Linda when she came over for my first date. So that was a big deal movie for me. And Harvey Korman, I have such a great affection for. I just exposed my kids the other day to Carol Burnett, the Carol Burnett Show. There's a couple full episodes on YouTube. And so I wanted to introduce them to Carol Burnett. And it was kind of awesome because I have a couple kids that have a pretty funny sense of humor that is a little bit like mine. And so watching my kids watch Carol Burnett for the first time was flipping awesome. So, you know, the famous dentist, you know, skit with Harvey Korman and Tim Conway and, you know, just some of the outtakes. Inevitably, really, Harvey Korman was basically like Jimmy Fallon on SNL. He could not hold it together for most of the skits that took place. So I always still find it funny, the outtakes of any comedy, whether it's, you know, Schitt's Creek, some of their outtake stuff that they put out, or The Office, you know, even Scrubs. I remember, I mean, I was such a big fan of Scrubs when that was out. And anyways, so pretty good stuff. What are you doing with this ding ding, Brett? What does that even mean? Are you trying to say drink drink? Are you drunk? What's happening? May the Schwartz be with you, right? Exactly. Yeah. my struggle right now, I'm homeschooling a second grader, and all I can tell her is that if it isn't Jesus, yeah, we're worshiping bread, right? That was my phrase. I have a shirt that says, if it's not Jesus, we're worshiping bread. You know, I saw a cute little picture today of someone I know whose little kid was sitting on her lap while they were watching online and a little bit of adoration, and the little tiny child's hands was in a prayer pose, and I thought, how sweet is that? That's so precious. And I think in a lot of ways, one of the things that I've been cherishing is just some of the communication opportunities I've had with my wife and with my kids. I always love talking to Linda anyways. We have some really deep conversations, and it's pretty cool. But it's also been nice to be able to have some deeper conversations with my kids and just talking about the importance of faith. My son Noah right now is leading his brothers in a Bible study on St. Joseph. He's taking that Father Don Calloway book, and he's kind of running through that with the kids. And I'm pretty impressed with that. So, let's see here now. Let me just check a couple of you here. Tim, thanks for tuning in tonight. And unorthodox, I've never seen that, Melissa, so I don't know anything about that. But yeah, Sarah, Best in Show, one of my all-time favorite movies. That thing is hysterical. So is Waiting for Guffman, which is kind of about this whole small-town theater performance, and it just becomes insane. Christopher Guest plays like this director, and it's pretty funny. I'm a big fan. So tonight, I thought I would just talk about something really kind of simple, and this probably springs off of some of the junk I've been dealing with on my Facebook page. So I have two Facebook pages. I have one that's my personal page, and it's just Chris Padgett, and the other is called, is the one you're watching right now, Chris Padgett Friends. So I do a live every night in Insomniac Insight every night on my public page. And as a general rule, it's just fun and crazy, and I'm not trying to do anything super religious here. Just trying to be, you know, a nice breath of fresh air amidst the crazy. But one of the things that I realized the last couple of days is that I had put one post up, which we talked a little bit about yesterday, and it was almost like it unhinged, you know, everybody from sanity. It was just kind of like the catalyst, the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak, and everybody kind of went a little bit nuts. And all I just was saying was, you know, I expect leadership to be a little bit more controlled and calm and not resort to name calling. That's where I left it. It wasn't really a big call on anything having to do with who's Republican, who's Democrat, who's better. It just was, no matter whether it was Republican, Democrat, I think that leadership should be a great example of control and charity. Maybe not fully charity if they're not Christian, but if they say they're Christian, especially then charity, right? So you would have thought I said, you know, let's have, you know, polygamy as the norm. And here's what I've come to conclude, and I just want to simply say it like this. When I say to someone, and I say it on this page, and I'll say it on my personal page, and I say it when I talk publicly, when I say, I love you, and I care for you, and if you're messy, it's okay. When it comes to friendship, I'm all in. It's not a joke. Like, I really do love people who are decidedly and totally themselves, whether they're messy or not. And I mean, I'm just kind of amazed. It's almost as if right now you can only like someone if they articulate and believe things the same way you do. And I don't get it. Like, I don't get that. There's nothing about that that's normal to me. What kind of life is that, and friendship base is that, if the only people in your life are the people that 100% look at life the way that you do, think about things the way that you do, and praise everything that you praise? Like, there's zero ability to have any type of growth and conversation. Brett, I think you really like this. That's what I'm sensing. Thank you. The thing about this, and I mean this, I feel like we've lost the ability right now as a culture, specifically online here, to have conversations or to open up a dialogue about a topic that makes us uncomfortable. And so I'm a little bit worried about that in a way. It's here's the reason I'm worried. I'm going to give you the real heart of the matter here, is that on my Facebook page, the public one, it's open to anybody, period, right? So I keep focused on simple ideas. Let's have fun. We're going to smile a lot. On my personal page, I really need to wean that out, to be honest, because that place is supposed to be I do a lot of more ministry stuff on my personal page. And I guess simply put, what I'm trying to say is that I don't know if I have the energy and the time to micromanage everybody's frustration that I'm not articulating things the way that they want me to articulate them. That's why it's my personal page. Like, I'm going to share things with people who are close to me, people I know. So when you go to my pages, there are people from all sorts of lifestyles. People who are Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, nothing. You have people on my Facebook pages that are in same-sex relationships, who are, married, divorced, their marriages were annulled. They are just living together. You have people on my social media page who are atheists, agnostic, Christians, different religions. You have people on my in my Facebook page who are rich, who are poor, who are conservative, who are liberal. And you know what the thing is that the most animosity comes from two places. One, it's like a person that grew up in a religious scenario and has just left it, and they're filled with a lot of frustration and bitterness, which, by the way, I can understand, and I'm not resenting them for that, but they can have some very harsh takes on things. And I hurt for them because they've been hurt. But the other place, and this is such almost the dominant reality of the people who just lose it and become super irritated and almost unbalanced, is Christians. And the thing that makes me so irritated about this is that they're witnessing a behavior to people on my Facebook page who are looking at them and watching them to see how they behave. They'll know we're Christians by our love. And the thing is that there isn't a lot of love in that kind of dialogue and discourse. And what I notice is that if you're a Christian, at least in this day and age, it seems like we're angry with people because they don't hold to and align themselves to our ideology and our belief structure. I think, why would they hold themselves to my ideology and belief structure if they're not a Christian? And if they're not a Christian, my responsibility, my job is, my opportunity is to love them right where they are, period. Whether they believe what I believe or not, whether they do what I think they should do or not. Like, I'm going to love them, period. Whether they fall in stride and in step with whatever moral understanding is that I have and hold to based on my Catholic faith. And this is where I'm struggling, is that I think we are doing it wrong. We're saying, I'll love you, I'll validate you, I'll affirm you, I'll appreciate you if you can say things the way I say them, if you can do things the way I think you could do them. And we're angry and we're irritated because people don't hold to our ideologies and our theologies. And do you think that your anger is going to change these people who do not believe the way that you believe? It's not. It doesn't do anything for it. So I'm worried. I'm kind of worried in a way because I feel like we're super polarized right now. And we're not just polarized in terms of a political polarization. It's certainly that. But we're polarized even, unfortunately, within the Christian realm. I'm not even talking about the polarization that seems to happen between people who are, you know, called traddies and, you know, and whatever the regular Christian groups or the charismatics. It keeps bringing to mind that St. Paul phrase, I'm Paul or Apollos, you know, I mean, basically it's all about Jesus when it's said and done. And I worry that we're pushing more people away from our faith than we are drawing them in. And you know what the problem is too, is that they think, oh no, well, what you're saying, Chris, is you're saying it's almost a relativistic approach to Christianity. Then you can believe what you believe, I'll believe what I believe, and no big deal. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying we modify truth and pretend truth is a lie or lie is a truth. That's not what I'm saying at all. But there has to be a way for us to love people who don't believe what we believe, because that's what Jesus did. Jesus didn't look at the woman caught in adultery and say, you know what, you need to really behave before I have a conversation with you. No, he saw her in her worst. And then he asks, where are your accusers? There are none, my Lord. And then he says, neither do I accuse you, right? Go and sin no more. What's the motivation for her whole life change in that moment is that she knew she could have been stoned to death by the law. And she knew that she was guilty, caught in the very act of adultery. She knew that. And Jesus didn't say to her, you know, keep doing what you're doing, because that was already an obvious given. But he loved her in her brokenness. He loved her in that incredible radical way that says, I see the entirety of you. I see all the reasons why people would be mad at you and why you are the recipient and worthy of, you know, the legalities of death. But yet, I'm not accusing you. Like, there's something so inclusive and loving and embracing about Jesus. But we don't do that on social media. Like, we don't. We like just become unhinged and we unravel because somebody is holding to a political perspective that we don't hold to. Somebody is articulating something that we think is wrong. And so we're gonna do the right thing, and we're gonna just shine the light and show them how bad they are. We haven't even earned the right to speak to these people like that yet. The way this works is you earn the right to share your life. You love people, and when they know that you love them, even when they won't change, then they're more ready to listen. And then people are like, well, but they're not affording me the respect that I'm affording them. Duh! Of course they're not affording you the respect that you should be giving, that you're giving to them. The moment you give your life to Christ, the moment that you lay yourself down and say, have me, Jesus, I want to be with you. I want to live like you. You're gonna basically then look at others around you and see their lack of understanding isn't an offense to me personally. Their lack of understanding is just a lack of understanding. And the way that they're gonna come to an understanding is your willingness to love them and their brokenness. It's the story of the Good Samaritan in a nutshell, basically. I don't know why I just had to get that off my chest. I've been really irritated with this lately. And yes, I even love the people who are irritating me. Of course I do. But as my brothers and sisters, and we're on the same playing court here, Christians, I'm going to challenge you, just like you will challenge me. I'm going to look at you and I'm going to say, okay, I get you. I understand what you're saying. Yes, we're not talking about relativism. We're not talking about, you know, nominalism, you know, that everybody just gets to the same place by just calling something a different name and it's all just the same deal. That's not what I'm saying. But there's something about the human person that we have to love, period, whether they are like us or not. And that is the reality of God having made them in the image and likeness. And there's something about recognizing that in a person, even when they don't recognize that in themselves, that breathes life into a situation. Think about it. In your life, man, when you've struggled, who did you go to? The person that was looking at you like you've already failed, and they knew you were going to fail, and they told you you were going to fail. Is that who you go to and say, you know what, I'm struggling? No. You don't go to that person. You don't go to that person because you know that they don't love you. They only love you if you perform according to the way they want you to perform. But Jesus looks at you, and this is the verse for us, right? While you were yet sinners, Christ died for us. That's it in a nutshell. That's the way I'm supposed to be treating people around me. While you were yet sinners, Christ died for you. I mean, there's no way I was motivated by somebody's critical, pharisaical perspective in my life. And if truth be told, I was far harder on myself than anybody could have been. I was living under the constant weight of not being able to perform in a way that I knew that God wanted me to. And that kind of legalistic hell, which it was already overwhelming. And the last thing I needed was somebody to push me further into that chaos. The things that changed my life were people who loved me, people who were so awkward in so many ways, who looked at me and saw me and loved me even when I couldn't perform like they wanted me to. Do you know, I could care less if you're a Republican or a Democrat. I could care less if you are rich or you are poor. To be real honest, I have no idea when I'm communicating to people whether you're rich or poor. I have no idea if you're in a state of mortal sin or if you're in a state of grace. I have no idea. My job is not to look at you and judge you and analyze whether or not you are able to perform in a way that is pleasing to me. My job is to look at you and to love you, to see the person that God has made and to help you recognize that no matter what you go through, God is with you now. And I think that's why I get so sick and tired of these almost like bumper sticker responses to real life issues and these cliched, you know, almost like placebo responses. Like, let me just say this and it's going to make everything better. Sometimes things don't just immediately get better. And we have to recognize and know and be okay with the fact that God is with us in our storm. That's it. It doesn't mean the storm goes away sometimes. But for many people, it's almost like you're not even allowed to recognize God is with you in your storm because you're not performing according to the standard. This is what I told a whole bunch of youth leaders in the diocese recently. I said to them, I think we're setting people up for failure by placing before them, dangling before them this idealized version of a Christian life. What we need to be doing is looking at them and saying, where you are right now, Jesus is with you right now in that moment, in that inability to do things right, in your struggle with holiness, in your propensity for sin, in your addiction and addictive behavior, like in all of it, whether it's good or bad, Jesus is with you now. And from that realization that God is with me now, that he sees me entirely, that he loves me entirely, that he wants to do something in me now, that motivates a change. That's what this is about. So yeah, you know what? If a whole bunch of people wanted to unfriend me on my page, part of me is like, good, because I don't, you there's going to be a million other reasons why you wouldn't like me if my post irritated you. What's been kind of cool though is I've had a couple people who private messaged me and they basically said a little of what I've said. And one of the things that was said recently was that I can't believe how people have spoken to me on this thread. And I articulated to them, I'm ashamed at how people have spoken to you because it's inexcusable. And the way that people have spoken to one another is generally negative coming from the Christian elite. I just, listen, I'm going to die. I'm going to go to my last breath following Jesus, period. I'm all in with him. I'm a firm believer. But when I die, I'm telling you right now, I want two things to happen. One is I want my family to be able to say confidently, my dad, my husband loved me 100%. And two, I want the world to say, you know, he was real. Why do I want that? Because there's nothing about what I'm doing here that I want to be fake. And the Jesus I need in my life is not an idealized version of something. The Jesus I need in my life is the one that bled and died, the one that we're going to reflect upon this Holy Week, and as we go to Holy Thursday and Good Friday, and as we go through this Triduum, this time of just sorrow and struggle, that's the Jesus I need in my life. That is Jesus, the one who died for all of my sins, that I am all in for. But I'm just not going to settle for playing a game. Like, I just need a real Jesus in my real life. And I think really people need that message. And, but you know what's interesting about that? It doesn't get you a lot of likes. I've realized this over the years. People want safe and they want easy and simple. They do not want questions. Struggle. It's like they want the stereotypical flow. And I can't. Here's my desire. I don't tell this to too many people, but Lord willing, when I die and I go to see Jesus, I want him to look at me and I would like for him to say, Chris, you made me laugh so hard I had to catch my breath. That's my desire. I just had to get that off my chest. Thanks for listening to me rant. The amount of likes I've gotten from Brett tonight has probably been the most I've ever gotten from a single human being ever. So thanks. That's very nice. It seems excessive. It seems quite possibly that it's a little, it might be a little much, but thank you. All the ministers involved in the Dirty Vagabond Ministry of Pittsburgh are my heroes. Yeah, man. I love the Dirty Vagabond peeps. There's no doubt about it. I'm grateful for them. I love it. I love what they're doing. Jeff, nobody cares if I ran for president. That's why. All right. Last thoughts, and then I'll probably call it because I want to read a little bit tonight. I'm finishing a book soon. I got my Mistborn one. I showed you that. I'm reading a Jim Butcher book too. So, last thoughts. So tomorrow we're gonna be doing a lot of stuff with the new animals. We got a bunch of new animals yesterday or today. Well, it was really yesterday now, but. We got the ducks, we got the bunny, and so we're going to be working a little bit on some pens and stuff. We're going to talk a little bit about that tomorrow on the County Route Report. Thanks for tuning in there. And, of course, I welcome your prayer requests. So if you want to leave those here, you can do that, and I would be glad to pray for you guys. And, yeah, I don't know, if you want to throw in some thoughts on this rant tonight, you can do that too. If you want to talk about what you're watching on television, you can do that too. Basically, books, TV, faith, prayers. I mean, that's kind of what I do here. Family. Just want to thank some of you guys, especially Sarah Cook. I want to thank you. You've been such a great friend. My goal is to send you some books. Leslie Cavins, you've been such a good friend too. Thank you so much for tuning in to so much of what I do. Brett, you're obviously my brother from another mother. I love you. James, it's great to have you come back into my life and just share a little bit. Jamie Wagner, I'm very grateful to see you here tonight. I don't know if I remember you too much. Forgive me for that, but my brain is dysfunctional. Josh, I'm thankful for you, brother. It's kind of neat to see you grow and be a good man of ministry. And Tim Bronlewe, sorry I've butchered your name. Melissa Doyle. I love, you know, it's funny you say any Neil Gaiman book. That's pretty awesome. Thanks. Because he's a legend and much appreciated. David Ong Yuvienko, thanks for watching a little bit tonight. Jamie Wagner, that's pretty awesome. Good to see you. You know, Natalie Stefanik, of course. I love your family. You know that. Look, all that to say, all the people who've tuned in and people who've commented. I'm so grateful. Like and share, please. Just, you know, this is just kind of for you to just have a no-brainer, a little bit of moments. I don't know why I went off on that rant tonight, but, you know, it's going to happen with me. So hopefully it was a little bit of an encouragement. So Kim asks, top five movies to watch with your spouse. Okay, so here's the thing is that Linda and I, we were just talking about this recently. We don't really watch as many movies now. We watch more like television series. So we'll pick a series and we stay with it and we watch it. And honestly, I kind of like that. I like that. So we, for better or worse, we stick with it. We love the, you know, Marvelous Miss Maisel. We love that series. That was a great series. Partly I loved it because it's just kind of looking at the world through the eyes of a comedian. That was a great series. Kind of wish Linda were here right now. She'd give some of the obvious ones. But Linda's a super BBC Anglophile. She's hardcore into anything British. So Doc Martin is one of our favorites. It's a phenomenal, quirky village, Port Wayne series that, you know, it's a doctor that has this aversion to, he's got like a phobia with blood. He was a surgeon and he basically has to go try to recoup in this small town and he's got this horrible personality. If you remember House, the television series, it's a little House-esque, but it's in a small little village in in Port Wynn. And it's awesome. It's awesome. So we kind of like that stuff, honestly. We like little series. Like, I love the Luther series with Linda. She's going to find something with BBC. As a family, sometimes we would watch Doctor Who a lot as a family. So the David Tennant years and the Matt Smith years, that was a big deal. We loved that. And then Linda and I are a little bit nerdy, so of course we watched The Lost in Space, the new remake, and even, you know, the Battlestar Galactica one that was 8 years ago, whatever it was. That was pretty good. So we liked that stuff. Sherlock was great. We loved that together as well. And I don't know. So, but we have a couple of funny shows that, you know, we don't really talk about a lot, but we watch all the time. One is Ink Master. We watch that every single time. So we record that. And that's our show together. And then we watch Alaska, The Last Frontier with the Kilchers. That's a big favorite for us. So, movie-wise, we have a movie that we would watch pretty regularly, maybe once every couple years. It was called The Edge with Anthony Hopkins and Alec Baldwin. And it was kind of the survivalist movie that we watched. And one of our favorite movies is Dances with Wolves because of some memories that we have as a couple. What books are you reading now? My husband thinks you might be reading one of his faves. So, Iris, I'm reading probably about a half dozen at least right now. I'm reading The Mistborn book by Brennan Sanderson. I'm reading The World According to Garp by John Irving. I'm almost done with both of those. I read a lot on Kindle just because it's a way for me to kind of have a lot of books right at the ready. Oh, I don't know what just happened there, but so I'm reading The World According to Garp. I'm reading The Protector's War, which is kind of the second book in that Amberverse series. I'm reading The Lords of Discipline by Pat Conroy. Mark Greene, this is his fourth book, Deadeye, which is kind of a, I don't know. I'm reading the last book in the Dark Tower series by Stephen King and Jim Butcher, The Captain's Fury. And I'm reading this weird freaking book called My Best Friend's Exorcism, which is, I can't decide if it's completely insane or if I actually like it. So we'll see. So whatever. Those are my religious book stuff is different. So yeah. Jimmy Snaz on Ink Master, the best. Right. Yeah. Xanadu, that's so funny, actually. The Brennan Sanderson book was, yeah. So Iris, I'm really a big fan of Brennan Sanderson. And part of the reason I'm a big fan of his is this guy knows how to finish a book and finish a series. And so that's a big deal for me because I'm kind of tired of falling in love with the series and then it's the guy doesn't know how to wrap it up. So, all right, I'm not going to bed. I'm going to go read for a little while and eventually go to bed. But I hope you guys are doing great. God bless you. I'll talk to you tomorrow.